Fascists are kind of cool, but not really. So is that like a problem, a thing?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Sweet Smell of Succession, an unofficial recap podcast about the HBO original series Succession. I'm David Chen. I host podcasts like The Filmcast and Culturally Relevant. Joining me, as always, she is the co-host of podcasts such as Extra Hot Great, Listen to Sassy, and Again With This, Tara Ariano. Tara, how is the Roy family doing this week?
Bad. Bad. I mean,
yeah,
you know, at the end of it, you sort of think, well, this just proves that Shiv picked the wrong side after, you know, at the end of episode two, because she knew while she was doing it that she shouldn't go that way. But then you remember, oh, Kendall is also doing terrible. Like, there just isn't a good side to be on.
Mm-hmm.
What
indeed,
do you think?
Indeed. What do I think? Yeah, I think the strife and rifts that were crystallized last episode are even more stark this episode. So, yeah, but that's what's going on in season three, episode six of Succession. What it takes. Every week on this podcast, we recap and spoil this week's episode of Succession. Again, season three, episode six is what we'll be talking about today. You can find more episodes of this podcast at successionpodcast.com. Email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. Tara, let's start by talking about overall thoughts on this episode. Why don't you go first? What were your overall thoughts on this one?
I didn't really sort of start picking at the holes until you told me you didn't really like it. And I was like, oh, yeah. He's right. I mean, I also said that any episode would be a come down after episode five, which was so great.
Yes.
But I don't love it when the show tries to be too topical.
Yeah.
You know, and it sort of straddles the line. Usually, like, you know, Amazon is a company in this world. Zuckerberg is a person in this world, like, mm-hmm. you know, celebrities are mentioned by name, whatever. Like, it's, you know, it's New York isn't called Gotham. Like, this is the real world. I get it. But they don't, you know, they keep the president off screen. They mention him and they never say his name. And so now that we're like meeting more politicians, it's like, this is too close and I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is very clear from people who listen to this show that I am a huge fan of Succession.
Mm-hmm.
I think 90 to 95% of the episodes are like total bangers. I've seen the entire series, you know, four or five times through. Maybe in the whole first 20 episodes, there's maybe like one to two episodes that I don't go back and revisit, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I love them all. This is probably one of my least favorite episodes. Definitely my least favorite episode so far this season.
Yeah.
And possibly even a bad episode overall. Like, you know, there's a least favorite and it's not as good as the amazingness that usually comes with the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like, maybe it's even actually bad. But here is my main issue with this episode, right? As you indicated, it is trying to be topical. I think at its best, what Succession purports to do is offer you a window into the halls of power, right? And it's like, wow, oh my gosh, this, I think the reaction you're supposed to have as a viewer is like, oh my gosh, this is how it's done at these kinds of events? I can't believe it. You know, like, I think that's what the show kind of is trying to say is like, isn't our democracy, quote unquote, morally bankrupt that we allow people in smoke-filled rooms in, you know, Logan's suite to choose who the next president is?
Yeah.
Like, shame on us. You know, like, I think that is what it is trying to do. That's what this episode is trying to do, is my guess.
Mm-hmm.
And that just does not at all ring true whatsoever, in my opinion, because we have just been through probably one of the most consequential presidencies of our lifetime, in which the outside candidate that was clearly not an establishment choice is the person that ended up winning. I'm speaking, of course, of Donald Trump. Now, I think that what the ending of this episode is meant to indicate is like, oh, this is kind of a dramatization of Rupert Murdoch's eventual acceptance of the Donald Trump kind of presidency, right? Like, Rupert Murdoch and Donald Trump, like, eventually, obviously became simpatico. It's not like a relationship that has had no problems, but ultimately, like, Fox News was a big supporter of Donald Trump. And I think that's what this the end of the episode is gesturing towards. But I think the idea of like, oh, a bunch of like power brokers get together and choose someone, like we have just seen how that does not actually happen. It does not play out like that, because the people that the power brokers chose last time, that wasn't who ended up getting elected. Mm-hmm. And so for me, fundamentally, the episode rings really false, just as a like as a window into our politics. Beyond that, I feel like the way it tries to like introduce these three candidates, I think is pretty fairly opaque and clumsy. And I didn't find kind of the payoff to be particularly satisfying. So I thought this is a pretty rough episode, possibly one of my least favorite episodes in the show's run. But let's get into it. I'm curious, you know, let's dive into what actually happened and see if my reactions are completely unreasonable.
All right. Well, I mean, one of the problems with this episode straight off the top is that it's now that we're in season three, we're starting to see like this show does not have so many moves. And like the sixth episode of season two was at Argestes. Mm-hmm. And that was also the title of the episode, which was a progressive-ish symposium. So it's like, you know, opens up the world of the Roys. We see them interacting with people from the outside, blah, blah, blah. And that's the same thing that's happening here, which is also episode six of this season. It's called What It Takes. And it has a similar retreat vibe, except it's a retreat for the worst people in America, ultra rich Republican donors and the politicians that are trying to get their money. And when I first read the description,
we've gotten some pushback in the podcast reviews about how political we get on this show, Tara, on this podcast, Tara. But I feel like even in the universe of the show, they are supposed to be terrible. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, they hate each other. They don't even like each other.
They're framed as bad in the universe of the show. We'll yes. Put aside Tara and Mai's personal beliefs. Like, they are framed as, like, you know, hideous people. Okay, anyway, go ahead.
But when I saw the description of this episode and it said it was a political conference, I thought it was going to be CPAC, because they've already alluded, they've said CPAC by name in an earlier episode this season, so we know that also exists in this universe, but this is not that, probably because it would require too many extras and be too expensive or whatever to make a fake CPAC, because that's a huge event, and this is like much smaller. And so I feel like when I looked into it, the closest analog is events that are put on by the Council for National Policy. And, you know, you can link this in the show notes, too. You know, I won't get into what they do, but it's kind of the stuff that we see in the episode. And they've been written up on the Southern Poverty Law Center's Hate Watch blog. So, you know, I feel like one's goals should be don't get written up on Hate Watch. But
that, I mean, certainly that's one of my personal goals. But I'm also going to say that I watched the impeachment and I thought they did a pretty good job of simulating CPAC with very few people.
Yes, they did. Yes. That's
basically,
true.
they show like a glimpse of the kind of show floor or whatever conference right. hallway. And then they show the inside of one of the conference, like the sort of press conference rooms, and that's yes. it. That's the whole CPAC. So right, I feel like right. it is possible to like fake a small, you know, but I think.
But that's not what the story
correct,
is about.
The number of scenes they needed to do in this, like they couldn't, I don't think they could have pulled it off here. So right. I agree with you, yeah.
But also, the other difference is that CPAC is for everyone, and this is clearly like the elites of the elite.
Right. Yes. Yes.
So because the president announced his intention not to run for re-election very late in the cycle, that happened, of course, in episode five, the candidate is going to be decided at the convention, which will make pre-convention media dominance more important than ever. And people are already calling this the ATN primary. And I wrote this in my recap for Decider, but contested conventions basically do not happen anymore. There hasn't been one in this country in decades. But political conventions where shit actually gets decided are rife with dramatic possibility. And such leadership conferences are very common in the UK because it's a parliamentary system. There are a bunch of different parties and like just the wrangling is different. The mechanics are different. So I understand why Jesse Armstrong would contrive a way for there to be a contested convention on the show. But it's very, it's really improbable as a plot device.
Yeah, are you saying like the contested Republican convention in real life? Because are you saying like this? What this episode is proposing is that there might be a contested Republican convention.
No, or? she's saying at one point Michelle Ann says it will be.
I see. Gotcha.
The candidate is going to be decided at the convention.
Got it. Okay. Gotcha.
Whereas now, because there's so much like mechanics, you know,
right.
the election cycle basically is all the time.
Yeah.
Like it's decided through the primaries to the point where like some of the later primaries, like they basically don't even matter because the candidates, I mean, they matter, of course, but the candidate is usually decided pretty early on.
So we meet some of the big contenders. There's three big ones. And actually, you know, reading your write-up of this actually did help because of the way Succession is structured as a show,
mm-hmm.
we're constantly meeting random strangers in the show, and we don't actually know which one of them is going to become important until later.
Right.
And so it was kind of confusing to be like, who even are we supposed to be paying attention to here, you know, in this episode? But yes, who are the main contenders?
Well, they sort of tip who's going to be the most important in the way that Law and Order episodes do. Like, you always know the killer is the most famous guest star, and that's sort of the case here, too. Although all of these contenders are very well-known character actors. So first we have David Boyer, who's played by Reed Birney. He's the current vice president, and he seems like a very bland, uncontroversial Gerald Ford type. You have an even better analog, and as soon as I saw his name, I was like, wow, I did not even remember that was a person that existed. That's
amazing.
How forgettable.
Yeah, I mean,
he is.
I think this is clearly the Jeb Bush style pick.
As soon as I saw it in the doc, I was like, oh yes, you are dead right.
Yeah, which is basically like he was the establishment candidate.
Yes.
And he was also incredibly boring.
Yes.
Like, nobody could not motivate people. Hashtag please clap. So,
completely. Yeah. So the head of whatever this organization is that's running this, the Future Forum Summit, is named Ron Petkus. He's played by the great Stephen Root.
Yay.
I know.
Stephen Root, by the way, really into playing kind of guys in charge of shadowy organizations, I have to say. I'm going to just throw some names out there. No Country for Old Men,
mm-hmm.
played a similar role.
Yeah.
Get
Out.
Also, The Empty Man. On Get Out, yes.
Yeah.
I don't think he was the head of the organization in
Get Out,
but he's definitely a member of it, right?
For sure.
But yeah, so Get Out, The Empty Man, and what was the other one that I named? No Country for Old Men. He's like kind of like help the front person of these like very sketchy orgs, and he does it very well. So a huge fan of this guy, yeah.
Well, even on News Radio, where he played Jimmy James, like
yes.
there's lots of hints that he's involved in shady shit all the time. I mean, the joke was he's D.B. Cooper. No, he's not, you know.
Amazing, amazing. Yeah.
Anyway, so this guy, Ron, muses with Logan about whether it's Boyer's turn. Again, more proof for your Jeb Bush analog. So smart. But other than the fact of Boyer's current office, there does not seem to be much to recommend him.
Indeed. So who else is in the mix?
So then we also get Rick Salgado, who's played by Yul Vasquez, who seems to be trying to sell himself as a traditional Republican in the style of like, also boring, Mitt Romney or Ben Sasse. And he tells Shiv that if she backs him, he will get Logan out of Waystar by any means necessary, including sending Logan to prison to clear the path for Shiv. This is not the only reason that he is attractive to her as a contender, but it definitely helps.
I was pretty frustrated by like how little this episode gives you about this character. Like the emotional core of this episode is like Shiv arguing with Roman about who should be the nominee.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like it needed to give us a little bit more about what Salgado actually believes.
Yeah.
If they want us to really be invested in the Shiv argument at the end. And mm-hmm. I just felt like there's that one scene. And I think you're probably going to get to this later, but like, I thought the scene where Shiv meets Salgado is really, really well done because she kind of treats that conversation as though she is being recorded.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, oh, that's hilarious. You're
yeah,
funny
yeah.
that you're going to send, you know, and I really liked the way she handled that.
Yeah.
And I think she did a lot of smart things in this episode, but ultimately ended up on the wrong side of the episode. But like,
mm-hmm.
Anyway, a little frustrated they didn't give us a little bit more about Salgado. So,
yeah. So then finally we have Jared Mencken. He's played by Justin Kirk. He combines Tom Cotton's reactionary fervor with the debate me slickness of a Ben Shapiro. He's the only one who dares to say fuck ATN in a room that Logan is also in, but he's cultivating Roman on the side as well. And I kind of loved how there's only two conversations between Roman and Mencken, but they both have an almost sexual charge. Like they're definitely flirting in their way, but for, you know, access or support, not actually on their way to doing anything. Or are they? It's kind of hard to tell.
I agree. There's definitely some interesting chemistry between these two characters.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think, you know, I had written that this is kind of the show's Trump analog. It's interesting mm-hmm. that didn't do someone that was as outrageous as Trump. But I think you indicate in the show notes very smartly that it's like, this is kind of the smart, I think we're meant to interpret this as the smarter, more dangerous version of Trump.
Oh, exactly. Yes. That's why I said Tom Cotton or like Josh Hawley, same thing, where it's like,
yeah,
they're very media slick and way more ideological than Trump was. Trump just wanted power. He didn't really have any kind of coherent politics.
I got it by the end. I was just kind of frustrated overall with how, like, the show could have done something to it could have showed you, for instance, Mencken's character on like a internet broad, like an InfoWars style internet broadcast.
Shiv is watching him on some kind of show on her iPad, and it's like FAV or something. Like, it's not PGN, whatever it is. We've never seen this network before.
Yeah.
So that might be.
I wish there was like a little bit more of that, but yeah. Anyway, so
yeah, it's not even clear that he's a politician. Like he just may be a guy. It's unclear.
Yeah, but really nice rundown, Tara. David Boyer, Rick Salgado, and Jared Mencken, basically the three main choices here.
So. Yeah, one of them we may never see after this. I feel like Salgado's kind of done. Spoiler. But there's also still Connor. And given how little Willa is trying to hide her boredom and disgust about being there, not even she is taking Connor's candidacy seriously. So burn. Kendall is obviously not on this trip. He's back in New York, basically ignoring all the advice Lisa, his lawyer, is trying to give him about his imminent interview at the DOJ. He has truly never been more punchable than he is in this scene. Clip two.
Mr. Roy, we'd like to move on to the matter of these illegal payments.
Uh-huh. Fine. I mean, we've done that, but... Uh-huh.
Specifically, your firsthand knowledge of what happened.
Yep. Got it.
What we want you to explain to us, based on what you saw and heard, is how these illegal payments were made or approved and by whom.
Yep, got it. What's next?
You want to answer the question?
I think I'm good. Okay, fine. Well, I approve the illegal payments because I love sexual assault, and I love to cover it up. How's that? Is that bad?
Okay, we can wrap
Come
up.
On, just we'll privately run the timeline at home, but yeah, I'm good. We're good, right?
Good, and yeah, just humble, straightforward.
Hide the agenda.
No agenda.
Sure. They're government employees. I mean, how smart can they be? I'm not saying that. I'm saying what you think I think, right? And just so we're on the same page in terms of aims, for me, the wish list goes immunity for yours truly, task force for Waystar, my dad deaded.
Well, I don't do requests because I'm not a DJ, but I hear you.
He's such an asshole.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he thinks this is going to work, where he's just like, yeah, I'll run it myself at home. Like, people came to work today, like, to try to defend you. Like, pay attention.
Yeah.
Anyway, it seems
I think
like
it's also interesting in this episode that we'd never see him actually testify, basically. Like,
right.
We only see the beginning or the endings of his testimony. And, mm-hmm. and we can kind of infer from what he says after, you know, how well he actually performed.
Yeah.
It's like, on the one hand, that's just like pretty good storytelling to like kind of show you the effects of something and not the actual thing.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I'm bummed because the show has never shied away from a good Kendall meltdown.
Yeah.
And I'm bummed that we were deprived of the opportunity to see one this episode. So
I feel like that's coming in the next episode, but we'll see.
Yeah. We'll
so
see.
It seems like Kendall may be blowing Lisa off, not only because of his, you know, sense of superiority over her, although that's literally always part of it, but also because he's so certain his being on the side of right, plus the papers that he got from Greg, are going to protect him from any consequences. So Lisa has to tell Kendall that no, actually, what he brought her isn't really anything. And given that Waystar is now cooperating with the DOJ, everything they have turned over is just proving how well they insulated themselves from lawsuits between smart jurisdictional choices, doing things in international waters, et cetera, et cetera. So Kendall suggests that he could turn someone in the company, like turn them against Logan, but Lisa just tells him to go home and relax and get ready for the next day. And I assume because she now has lots of personal experience with how off-putting Kendall is and doesn't believe he could turn anyone.
Yeah. Or it's like a bad legal strategy, you know? But yeah, I think that Kendall going AWOL and doing his own thing, definitely a bad idea. Lisa has already learned for sure.
Yeah.
My question for you is, are we supposed to believe that this like table full of documents was all from Greg's pilfered collection? Because if you recall, I believe where he got these is that scene of him burning documents on the roof with Tom. And it seems like he was barely able to smuggle out like 5 pages. So I'm really curious, like where all these documents came from, or if you have any sense of where the chain of custody of the documents.
Yeah, I don't think that what we saw him burning was all of it. But I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. And she says they're, but she also says they're jigsawing them together. Which made me think like there were shreds as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think that probably the show is just playing a little fast and loose with the documents is my guess.
Like, yeah.
I think it's just like, oh, you know, it's like how if you're watching a Shakespeare play on stage and like they stab a guy and the guy like takes out like red handkerchief in his stomach and it's like, oh, he's bleeding. It's like Greg stole a bunch of documents. That's kind of what the show is doing with documents, basically.
Yeah, I mean, we never saw, like, we saw one, you know, one saves the day, one goes away. And if he was keeping half of everything he shredded, like, we really have no idea how much it ever was.
Yeah, I mean, there is that scene where he burns them on the roof, but yeah, maybe he wasn't burning all of them. Like, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? So, anyway.
Right.
Whatever the case, I believe these are the documents that Greg gave him. And apparently, according to Lisa, they are not as explosive as she was originally led to believe. So.
Correct. So at the DOJ meeting, Kendall looks like he's going to shit his pants. He really looks scared as they're wrapping up. Like he can tell it was bad. And he yells about it to Lisa down the hall from the interview room with the investigators in earshot. Clip 3.
I know how this works. Okay, my dad is drowning them in chicken feed and compliance bullshit. 5 years go by, and it's, hey, whatever happened to that big investigation into the bad people?
Ken?
Because you know what? They're scared of my dad. Come on. Pretend they're on the side of justice. They pretend they're on the side of the whistleblowers.
Not here.
But they're chicken shit.
Not here.
That should put a rocket up their asses.
We do not want this to get politicized.
Well, everything is politics, so...
Kendall, do you think you're smarter than me?
What? Do I... What? No. No.
Because maybe you are, but I am a better lawyer. You acted high-handed and defensive and then oscillated to wildly overfamiliar and glib. You sometimes undermined my status and didn't appear to be frank about your own involvement. But let's take stock, okay?
So this is where we all know she's fired, and that is what happens. Kendall is very sure he can get even better lawyers who are not as toxic as Lisa is, according to him. But since we already know Logan and Jerry's strategy when they were shopping for lawyers was to talk to a whole bunch of different ones so that they would be conflicted if Kendall went to them later, I have to wonder who's going to be left to help Kendall now.
Indeed. Not too many of the heavy hitters left. You know, I was not a big fan of this episode, but I thought this scene was kind of a masterpiece.
Yeah.
For the following reasons. Number one, she shushes him. Hilarious.
Yeah.
Number two, I actually think Kendall is right about what he's saying. Like, this is a very common legal tactic, is my understanding.
Oh,
of like
for sure, yeah.
Drowning
Absolutely.
Everyone. But the thing that he's wrong about is that it's a good idea for him to express that verbally and loudly at that point in time in that location. Right?
Yeah.
And there is this amazing moment when he says, that'll put a rocket in their ass or something like that. And then like Lisa gives him this look that's just like, wow, did we not read that the same way? You know, like she interprets it in completely the opposite thing of like, that is not going to put a rocket in their ass. In fact, like it might put a rocket in their ass against you, you know, like, but it is not doing what you want it to. And you are like basically going rogue right now.
Yeah. Well, it's also like, I mean, in the earlier clip, we heard him be like, that's not what I think. I just think that that's what you think, I think. And like, so she doesn't know while he's having this outburst that it's fake. She just thinks, oh, he's really this crazy. And then when she finds out it was a tactic, she's like, oh, he's even crazier than I thought.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But overall, I'm super impressed with Lisa's professionalism in general. She doesn't actually have that many, like, that character probably has 30 lines total in the whole show, right?
Yeah.
And so she doesn't have that much to work with, but she's able to come off as highly competent and actually kind of sympathetic. And I think this is a big accomplishment on the part of the actor. So,
yeah.
Really, really good job. R.I.P. Lisa as a Kendall's
You're in
lawyer,
a better place wherever
you're
you are.
In a better place now. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's true of Ji-hai, who plays Barry Schneider as well. She's probably had like 6 lines. And I, every time she's in a scene, I'm just watching her being like, oh, hating her life, hating Kendall.
Indeed.
Regretting taking this job. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
The Sweet Smell of Succession is sponsored in part by Warby Parker. Don't let your FSA or HSA dollars go to waste. Put them to good use on Warby Parker prescription glasses, prescription sunglasses, contact lenses, and eye exams. Warby Parker is committed to providing exceptional vision care online and in stores, offering eyeglasses, sunglasses, eye exams, and contact lenses. Glasses start at $95, including prescription lenses. I used Warby Parker's home try-on program to test drive some new sunglasses. The easy quiz helped me figure out which size and shape would probably be the most flattering to my face, and the frames I picked out were at my door just a few days later. I had only been planning to keep one, but since they looked so good and are so affordable, I might end up keeping 2. Whoops. If you prefer shopping in stores, Warby Parker also has retail locations throughout the U.S. Find your nearest store at warbyparker.com/succession. You can try Warby Parker's free home try-on program now. Order 5 pairs of glasses to try at home for free for 5 days. There's no obligation to buy, ships free, and includes a prepaid return shipping label. Try 5 pairs of glasses at home for free at warbyparker.com/succession. So Tom is continuing to spiral downward. He has hired a prison consultant, but his advice only seems to be magnifying Tom's fears. And Greg is also freaked out after the events of the last episode because Kendall won't tell him either way whether he's going to burn Greg. And Greg tells Tom he can't stop thinking about prison. Tom can relate. Clip 4.
It's just constant.
I tried that. Doesn't work. You know, what I'm preferring is to always think about it. And then when you don't, for a moment, it's like, ooh, someone's loosened their icy grip on my innards.
Yeah. I like that. I like it.
It's so funny, but it's so dark. Poor Tom.
I agree.
I also just read an article in the New Yorker about a financial criminal who now runs seminars for other people in the same position to help prepare them for incarceration. And when I looked it up, I was like, what's that? And it was. It's in the same issue with the Jesse Armstrong profiles from the August 30th issue of this year.
Nice. Did you? So you read the article. Like, are there any interesting factoids from the article that or anything that you took away from it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, these are very privileged people. And so there's a lot of expectation, like, you know, that what you hear is prison is, it's for these criminals is like a country club. And it's like, well, it's not. But a lot of these people, you know, never thought about the realities of incarceration at all until they were in that position themselves, which is not that surprising. So it's sort of interesting how it's turned some of them into like radical abolitionists and stuff. Not quite that far, but, you know. How their own self-interest has adjusted their worldview.
It's almost like when it impacts you, you care about it.
Yeah. Other people have empathy.
I don't know what's up with that. It's so weird that when it impacts you directly, somehow you suddenly care about the policy.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing. Anyway,
it's an interesting article and it's not very long. So we should link that in the show notes too.
Will do.
So Tom can't even make himself feel better by tasting wine from his and Shiv's vineyard. It turns out to be as bad as its screw top bottle indicates. And he tries again to talk to Shiv about his fears, but she finally
snaps. I'm sorry to interrupt here, Tara, anytime I see people talking about wine that like might be bad, I just think back to that scene from The Office where Michael Scott talks about wine. You remember that? And he's he has a kind of oaky afterbirth is what he says. And I was just like, That's kind of what he, it was so reminded me of this when Tom was like, yeah, it's kind of like vegetal, I think, yes, is what he says in the scene. It's like vegetal
feel. Everything he says about the wine is so funny. He's like, yeah, you really have to meet it halfway.
Indeed. They're finally like, meet it halfway. Yeah, exactly. It's bad. Yeah.
But anyway, he tries again to talk to Shiv about his fears, but she finally snaps at him to quit talking about it all the time. She doesn't know what else there is to say. And when she tries to smooth things over with sex, he pulls away from her, saying there's no point with her still on contraception. It's like throwing so much cake batter at a brick wall. This marriage is such a drag for everybody. Stop. Stop it.
I'm just going to say throwing so much cake batter at a brick wall is how I personally describe the physical act of love as well. And so it's actually cool. You know, sometimes you see your own experience reflected on television, and this is one of those moments for me. I was, oh, yeah, cool. Tom thinks of it that way, too. Anyway.
It's representation matters, yes, in every case.
Hashtag representation matters. Okay.
We can come back to them later. But anyway, Tom later brings Greg to a bad chain diner, explaining that. And I just... this is how it's represented. I have no problem with chain diners. I love every diner. I'm trash. So this is how the show feels. Not
big
me.
Denny's fan over here. I am. So
yeah, I like Denny's.
Yeah,
I like Denny's fine. I mean, when we lived in New York, there were like, you know, independent diners that we would walk to from our apartment, and that was my favorite thing to get on my birthday. Yeah. Grilled cheese sandwich and fries. Can't go
wrong. So no shade against the diners, although I think what is very clear in this episode is that this is not a place that you think that Roy's will show up in, right? So
that too. Yeah. But Tom explains he's there because he's trying to acclimate himself to food this bad, because that's all he'll get to eat in prison. And in fact, is like, it won't even be this good. So Greg,
you got to remove 30% of the taste too. So,
right. Yeah. So Greg brings up and explains Tom's latest work nickname. Now he's called the Christmas tree, because if you committed a crime, you can just hang it on Tom. So could Greg maybe also hang his crimes on Tom? Sadly, Tom agrees. And there's not even any pro quo. He won't even let Greg pay for their bad meals because, as Tom says, soon all his meals will be free. And earlier there was a moment when they were at a cocktail party or whatever where Greg had told Tom Kendall was probably going to burn him. And Tom does this double take. And I was sure it was going to be like, how dare Kendall come after my boy? But it was actually Tom fearing that Greg was threatening Tom. So I was glad to see that sort of balanced here and see Tom be decent.
I do think it's kind of an interesting turn that Tom is actually turning out to be probably the best person in the whole mix, right?
Yeah.
In the past, he has kind of been a part of the Roy family, but as he's grown more distant from the Roy family and as the possibility of like prison and suffering has become more clear,
yeah,
it seems like he is actually becoming a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he's talking and his kind of demeanor feels like the Tom of old before all this money and power corrupted him. So I think it's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, but the sort of the dark cloud over it is that, you know, it's not going to make any difference. Like if he goes to prison, like Shiv's not going to hang around for him. If he goes, she's done. She's moving on. I'm very sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Tom is in the middle of a super secret meeting about which candidate Logan, and therefore by extension, Ron and his money, are going to back when he gets a call. Kendall's in town and he wants to meet. And at first, Kendall says he just needs someone to say that nothing ever happened at the company that Logan didn't sign off on. But Tom won't even agree to that right off the bat, like agree that it's true. And as they're saying goodbye, Tom agrees to think about Kendall's offer, but he doesn't really know what he would get out of taking it. He would lose the family. He would lose Shiv. And there's also this clip 5.
Come on, man.
But and I don't mean to be insulting, but having been around a bit, my hunch is that you're going to get fucked, because I've seen you get fucked a lot, and I've never seen Logan get fucked once.
I mean, it's true. We thought we saw Logan get...
it's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. We thought we saw him get fucked in the season 2 finale, but here we are and he is fine.
I love how Tom basically begins the whole thing with like, no offense, but ... you know, yeah. Like,
yeah.
A couple of thoughts here. Number one, you know, after Tom turns against Kendall, you know, Kendall starts like taking pictures of him with his phone.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom's like, real classy there, buddy. Like, what do you think he was doing? Was he gathering evidence to potentially use against Tom later? That was my read on it.
Yeah. I mean, I think he wanted Tom to know, I have these. And if you know, I might send them to Shiv so that she knows you maybe betrayed her. I mean, that's how Kendall, right, I would assume, would frame it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't think that's going to be effective in any way. Like, Tom could just tell her, like, hey, Kendall came to me and I said no. You know, like, that's the, right, thing that Tom could do. So, but I think it's just to show, like, how kind of cutthroat Kendall is being at this point in time. So,
well, he's just saying anything he thinks is going to work. Like, in, yes, the same run up to the clip that we just heard, he's like, do you really think Shiv is going to wait for you? And then when, yeah, Tom is like, am I supposed to tell my wife that I did this? And Kendall is like, she'll respect you if you do. She'll come on side too. And it's like, no.
Yeah. I mean, he's saying all of his, he's giving his like VC speech, you know?
Yeah.
He's like,
yes, exactly.
It's like, yeah, you're going to be a man. And like, I have, mm-hmm, these killer lawyers. Like, but the thing is, he just fired like this amazing lawyer that he did have, you know? Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, he's just throwing whatever at the wall and hoping some of it sticks. And none of it did. I also wanted to point out this very, very touching moment when Tom's like, yeah, I fell in love with your sister. And like, that's what happened to me. Mm-hmm. Like, that was his fatal flaw.
Yeah.
Was actual genuine love, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of a nice kind of tender. It reminds you how this guy got wrapped up in this whole thing. It's very Shakespearean, I think, that guy,
mm-hmm,
and Tom's fate. And, yeah, then, you know, I thought this moment with Tom where he's like, I've never seen Logan get fucked once is an amazing line.
Yeah.
It is then followed up by actually a terrible line, I think, where he's like, you know what they're doing up there? They're choosing the next president of the United States. This reminds me of like an Aaron Sorkin line, like, yeah, that's somehow in Succession. You know, like it wasn't great in my opinion. It just felt a little clunky. And also, I don't even believe it's true that they are choosing the next president of the United. You know, like, I don't, mm-hmm, actually believe that this event will necessarily swing it because of, again, how we've seen things play out in real life. So anyway,
right.
Kind of rough there, but yeah.
Well, back in the suite, it's a suck up contest among the candidates. Boyer seems like a safe choice, but no one is that excited about it. He does say he won't block Waystar's acquisition of a tech company called Gojo, which Kendall mentioned in the fourth episode, one with Josh.
Tara, I bet, I'm so curious about what Gojo does, and it's probably this, some machine learning AI company, but how cool would it be if it was just the soap company, you know?
Well, we know it has good UI, bad content. That was what Kendall said about,
yeah,
it.
But anyone who's ever worked on a construction site knows Gojo is the best hand soap that you can use afterwards. So I actually think Gojo is this hand soap company, and prove me wrong, show. Prove me wrong. Okay, go ahead.
I mean, this is a mild spoiler, but it's in the description for the next episode that this is the one where we finally meet Alexander Skarsgård's character.
I see. All right.
And he's the head of this company.
Got it. Okay. Well, we can look forward to that then. So Alexander Skarsgård is really into soap is what I'm hearing from you. No,
yeah.
I'm just joking. all right. Please proceed.
I mean, the smart money is on soap in a pandemic environment, right? Mm-hmm, like, this can, mm-hmm, only go up and up, right?
Agreed. Agreed.
So Salgado's meeting happens off screen. All we see him leaving as Tom is coming back. So I assume that we're supposed to think he was there. And Mencken doesn't even bother meeting with Logan himself. He stays in the bathroom of the suite with Roman. And they sort of go back and forth with Roman trying to suss out, like, do you actually believe the bullshit that you say? And I couldn't really tell. It's just the only thing that he seemed to believe from what we got in that exchange. And the whole thing was too long to clip. But his analogy was like, I've been, you know, running my farm for 100 years, and all of a sudden 40 guys show up in a truck and they say, I have to give them my farm. And I just think before you take from the country, you should have to give or whatever. It's like some gross nativist, you know, claptrap like that. So that part seemed to be true when he was like, oh, yeah, I read Aquinas and St. Augustine. Like, I'm sure you do, you know. But anyway, it culminates in this clip 6.
Where are you in all this?
Me, Roman? You know. I'm creeping on the come up.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I've got some ideas for ATN, you know. Sluice out the fucking porridge and add some sriracha. poach some of those TikTok psychos, you know, e-girls with fucking guns and jewel pods, you know, give me some straight shot blacks and Latinos. No more of this fucking pillows and bedpans, you know, we're strictly bone broth and dick pills. Deep state conspiracy hour, but with like a fucking wink, you know, funny. And the whole show is kind of set up for the star, President Jared Mencken.
So Logan's criteria for a candidate was someone who gets it and someone who pops. And we know Roman isn't ideological, but he can tell Mencken pops, even if he is very anti-immigrant and doesn't rule out borrowing ideas from H, as in Hitler. And the idea that someone like this can have a lot of charisma and be interesting as a TV personality and then be elevated from that to being a very powerful politician is the problem with our current politics and also media.
Indeed, yeah.
Yuck. Mencken does a bit with a Coke that's a callback to a phone call that Logan had placed earlier to make Boyer grovel.
I thought that was awesome, by the way. Like, the way that played out was, it's like such a, you know, I guess it's not that subtle, but he's like, mm-hmm. yeah, hey, I need a Coke. It's a very innocuous request on its face.
Yeah.
But of course, saying, yes, I'll bring you the Coke is like a, you're basically like, it's your way of kissing the ring, right?
And, yes.
Because vice presidents do not bring Cokes. You know what I mean?
No.
I actually was surprised that Boyer was like, isn't it a little late? Like, Boyer should know what the fuck's going on right now, you know? Like,
right.
So that was weird to me. But yes, his resistance to bring the Coke struck me as right on. So,
yeah. Well, Boyer is also the only one of the three real contenders that we see approach Logan directly and say, hey, I would like you to support me.
Yeah.
Which Logan just mocks him for. But anyway, it seems like Logan is convinced on the basis of Roman's endorsement and Mencken's own self-confidence that Mencken is the guy, and that's how this plays out. Clip 7.
His chief of staff broke a kid's jaw at a rally.
If we don't come to an accommodation, we get outflanked, and we lose the ATM dollar machine when we need cash to fight tech, right? And buy Gojo. Shiv wants her way, I want my way. Connor wants his way, so that's even.
It's not even. My opinion counts for more. No, it does. It just fucking does, okay? I know this. I know. People hate him. They fucking hate this guy. You have to look at the climate.
Climate said I was going down. Climate said I should just step aside. I guess I'm a climate denier.
I'm sorry. This is how it happens?
Good night.
Dad? Dad, come on. He's fucking dangerous.
I mean, that climate denier was some pretty good wordplay, I have to say. So.
Did you think so? I thought that was another corny line.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, but I have a soft spot for the dad puns, so.
I guess. It's definitely the fact that he could even make it undercuts my theory that Logan is seriously losing it, because it's the middle of the night. And if he's still that sharp.
Yeah. So remember, I said like last week his health would probably be a little blip. So I'm going to say I think I was right, at least until next season. So
he's not even wearing the boot anymore.
Yep. So.
So Boyer is not the only one that Logan is humiliating this weekend. As they're leaving, he forces Shiv to pose with the rest of the family in a portrait with Mencken. Guess she does get embarrassed after all, because she hates it, but she does it.
Indeed. Although she was speaking earlier about the company and not her personally. But
yeah.
I know what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So a few thoughts here on this whole Shiv plotline. One of the things that I thought was captured well with this whole arguing in the rooms is Shiv theoretically has the most expertise out of anyone here, right? Because she's actually run political campaigns and won.
Right. And I will just interrupt to say she ran Democratic Senate campaigns in New York, so they were hard to lose, but go on.
And I think that she does really do a good job of capturing that, like, I actually know better than you and my point of view should count for double yours. And like,
yeah.
And, you know, you can feel her frustration here. But the other thing is also that, like, Shiv's kind of motivations are starting to come more into focus. Throughout this entire season, you and I have kind of had debates about, you know, what are Shiv's aims and what does she actually want to do? I actually do think And we now have lots of data around like what Shiv's aims are. And I do think like if you take them in their totality, she does not, she wants to steer ATN and Waystar Royko away from its more extremist elements.
She definitely does. And there's several points in this episode where she says like, what if we went blue? Like she really thinks.
Right. She's like, should we pivot to a different
ATN
party?
ATN is going to back a Democratic candidate. Like,
right. Should
oh,
we pivot
honey.
To a different party is what she asked. Right. And
yeah.
And so I think that, I would agree that the show has kind of underplayed Shiv's hand or Shiv as a part of its hand, you know, like throughout the entire series run.
Mm-hmm.
If we are to believe like Shiv is like a force for good in the universe, I don't think the show has done a good job of setting that up. But
yeah.
If you look at this and you look at her comments around the, the acquisition by Pierce or the Pierce acquisition, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was like, you know, if we acquire Pierce, like somebody has to make the news, you know, like she was like afraid that like if, you know, News Corp owned the New York Times, basically, right?
Yes. Like,
what would happen to the news in America, right? And,
yeah.
So I do think like she does not want the more extremist elements mm-hmm. or even any of the right-wing elements of the company, but
yeah.
Is she actually a force for good in the universe? I don't know that the show has done enough to build that up. We just know that she wants to be slightly less dangerous than the rest of the family at this point, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a matter of like two things. One, she overestimates her own influence. Like, I think she went into Waystar thinking, I'm his favorite. I can, once I'm part of the mob, I can steer it in good direction.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just increasingly is being made clear to her that's not the case. Like the organization is what it is. She's not going to be a reformer.
Yeah.
And you know, the other is if she has an idea of like she could do triage or at least mitigate things, she can't really do that either. So I think what she's having to confront in this situation is like, oh, my power is worthless. Like whatever power I have, it doesn't mean anything because I'm not at the top of the chain. I'm not the one making decisions. I just have to be an adjunct to it. And that's why she didn't want to be in the picture. Like, she doesn't want there to be evidence in the future of, like, look at this fucking idiot posing with this guy or whatever. But it's like, you had the chance to not be that person when you were out of the company and you made a different choice and now you got to eat it. Like, your choices are to be in the company or not. And being in the company is bad.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with your assessment, and I think just if we take season 2 and 3 in their totality, I am now realizing how much of these seasons are basically Shiv getting humiliated.
Yeah.
Do you know, like,
yes,
she's had a rough run, and so I'm very curious like where this character ends up, because like she's just been nonstop humiliated. Like,
mm-hmm.
think of season 2, episode 5, and you know, last episode, right? Like,
yeah,
scenes where she's like, hey, let's toast, you know, I'm the boss now, and like all these things, and like it's all ended bad for her. So like I am curious like where they're going to take this character, but you know, I think the performance is amazing, and I kind of hope it ends up in an interesting place. So
yeah, I agree.
All right, what else happened this episode, Tara?
Just a few other stray remarks. Some rando at a cocktail party at the event tells Roman that his mother, Caroline, has just announced her engagement to someone the kids have never even heard of, whose name is Peter Munyon. And you clocked this, and as soon you said, look out for this.
I was very excited when they said Peter Munyon, because Jesse Armstrong fans will realize that I believe this is a reference to a character in The Thick of It, another show that Jesse Armstrong has worked on. Character mm-hmm. in that show is named Peter Mannion.
Yes.
So that's either a huge coincidence or it's kind of a subtle nod to this other character from this other show that he's done. So
yeah, although, I mean, like, why wouldn't it just be Peter Mannion? He's a Tory. Like, they're both in the UK. Would make sense. Like,
I thought of this. This probably has something to do with, like, character rights, is my guess.
Oh, yeah.
Like, maybe yes. They don't have the rights to refer to a character in the other show or something like that. Although they did do the same thing with, like, The Thick of It and In the Loop, but they probably got permission. Some, you know, like, is my guess. They, like, Malcolm Tucker's in both those the show and the movie. Right,
right.
So
right.
I feel like maybe they just didn't have the character rights. I think also it's when Roman's looking at his like phone, it's clear that Peter Munyon is like the CEO of like some home care company.
Yeah, it's a it's a chain. I think it's a chain of like senior citizens' homes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very, very respectable job, theoretically. If you're, you know, if you run it honorably, it's very respectable.
I'm sure we're gonna find out he doesn't.
Yeah, we'll see. Are you sure? What evidence do you have for that, other than that every character in the show is a piece of shit, Kara?
I mean, the thing is, you only ever hear about the CEOs of nursing homes when something has gone horribly wrong. Mm-hmm, so I'm just, you know, I'm just playing the odds. But I also think, like, we only have three episodes left. The next one is going to be about Kendall's birthday party. And then I think if I had to guess, I would guess the eighth episode is going to be the convention. And then the ninth episode is the wedding, because it's a, they say it's in Tuscany. They establish that in this episode.
We'll All see. Right. We will see. Yeah. What else goes on in this episode?
Well, when they're on the plane on the way to this thing in Virginia, which, by the way, they're on a private plane. So whatever that whole flap was about giving up the private planes, it hasn't happened yet or isn't going to. But Roman notices Logan showing Carrie, his assistant, a meme, and is tells Shiv, like, I think Dad's sleeping with Carrie. And Shiv's like, no way, she's too low on the totem pole, blah, blah, blah. But as the episode goes on, it's like, oh, no, they probably are. It kind of seems like it.
Yeah, they definitely are laying it on real thick, their relationship.
Yeah.
I think what is hilarious, the whole Carrie thing was freaking hilarious this whole episode, because every time Carrie tried to intervene in a conversation, it ground that conversation to a halt. This is like, basically, this is like me at a party, right? Like, there's like a circle of people and you try to like get in on the circle and like, they're like, I'll come into the circle and be like, oh yeah, that was interesting, that thing on NPR. And then like, everyone just shuts the fuck up, you know, like,
yeah,
they're like, why are you here? And like, I don't know who you are, but you're making me uncomfortable in this conversation. Please stop, you know, kind of thing.
Well, the difference is you're not, you know, a very highly placed executive assistant interrupting your boss, a corporate CEO, when he's talking to the vice president of the United States. You know?
I think the dynamic this reminded me of is probably what it would have been like with like Ivana Trump. You know,
oh God, yes,
in the
sure.
Trump White House. Like, basically, like, Ivana Trump, for those who don't know, Donald Trump's daughter, like, he strategically placed her in a huge variety of diplomatic settings where she had no business being, right? And so, like, it's like Angela Merkel, the prime minister of Germany, is like, why am I talking to Ivana Trump, who has absolutely no qualifications or skills for this job? You know, like,
yeah,
it makes no, it's just baffling to people when sort of outsiders are placed in this environment. And I thought that her kind of dynamic captured this really, really well. It is weird to have a character like this introduced so late in the game, you know?
Yeah.
She's been in earlier episodes, but
she's been around on the show since season two, at least.
Yeah. But like, I guess it's been like fairly gradual, kind of her, you know, becoming more and more of an important character. So it's not like completely all of a sudden, but it does feel a little bit of a sudden. Anyway.
It does. I mean, we've definitely seen less of her than we have of Jess, for example, Kendall's assistant.
Correct. Yeah. So anyway, we'll see how that develops. Obviously some intrigue at play there. So
yeah. Well, speaking of intrigue, like there's still no Marcia.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my assumption is they kind of worked out their differences and, you know.
But did they? Like, the point of the negotiations was that she was going to be his public wife again, and she hasn't been in the show at all.
Yeah.
Like, if their negotiations had been successful, she would have been at the shareholders meeting. She definitely would have been at this thing.
It's true. Yeah. I wonder if it was just a scheduling thing, you know, or.
Right.
You know, like, I wonder if it's a logistical thing or if there's a purposeful storytelling reason for her not to be there. So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I just assume they haven't come to terms yet.
Yeah. Interesting.
And that's why, like, you know, maybe that's why this Carrie thing has happened, because when she's going to come back in and be like, wait, now this one? What the fuck?
Yeah. All right. We'll see. Maybe it's a bomb that's the fuse has been lit. So
yes. And then I already alluded to this, but Kendall brings up his imminent birthday party again, because he blows past firing Lisa to tell Comfrey to repeat his ideas for his birthday party. And she quotes end times: Weimar meets Carthage meets Dante meets AI and antibiotic resistant superbugs. It Incredible. Sounds unbearable. But
it reminds me of this podcast called A Very Fatal Murder. Have you heard of this podcast?
I've heard of it. I haven't listened to it.
It's incredible. So A Very Fatal Murder is a parody of true crime podcasts.
Right. The Onion made it, didn't they?
Yeah, The Onion. It's amazing. I strongly recommend it. And basically, there is a there's a moment when it's about a journalist who's trying to find like the perfect murder to cover on his podcast, basically. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I still couldn't find a podcast that included all the elements I wanted to cover, like income inequality, carbon neutrality, and you know, the South Pacific garbage patch. And he starts like listing all these like random things that are like kind of topical. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminded me of like just like this is just, you know, word diarrhea basically again.
Yeah.
Couple of things I want to highlight that we haven't mentioned yet, I don't think, but apologies if we have. One is you just talked about like when Kendall breaks the news to Comfrey. That was an incredible moment because she kind of has this look of shock and disbelief on her face of like that they lost the lawyer. And he's like, oh, don't worry. It's going to be a good thing. It's going to be a good thing. And she like doesn't believe it, but she's got to keep, you know, got to keep going on. Keep moving. So that was an amazing performance by Comfrey's, the actor who plays her. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention is one of my favorite moments is Greg speaking up and saying, I feel like I have to say for our country, you should not make Connor the next president of the United States. Which,
well, he says you should not crown make Connor president.
Yes, which I just thought was amazing. Like, it's actually a good thing that Greg is saying in that moment.
Yes.
And he's saying it in a very Greg way. And I just thought that was like a brilliant moment. So love that. Mm. So anyway. That is what happened in the episode. But let's get to winners and losers in a moment and our quote of the week. Before we do that, though, we want to tell you that if you enjoy our conversations, you can find more of our work online. I host a couple podcasts, specifically Culturally Relevant, where I chat about the day's events with interesting people, mostly well-known writers, directors, but also sometimes I do some diary episodes as well. Check that out, Culturally Relevant, wherever podcasts can be downloaded. And if you want to support more of my work, you can also go to patreon.com/Dave Chen. Tara, if people are really enjoying your recaps here on this podcast, where else can they find your work?
Well, they can specifically find my recaps of this show, Succession, at decider.com. But I also talk about TV and pop culture in all kinds of different ways. So you can listen to my podcasts on Melrose Place, on Sassy Magazine, and generally about TV. And you can find all of those linked from my Twitter, TaraAriano. I doubt that anyone is coming into this in episode 6. I should say what they are, though. Again, this is about Melrose Place. Listen to Sassy About Sassy. Extra Hot Grade is the TV podcast.
You never know, Tara. I mean,
you never know.
I will say that for the last season of Succession recaps, like, our final 3 episodes were the most downloaded out of all the episodes. So
all right.
I think more people joined on the show as time went on. So.
Okay.
So if this is your first time, welcome. Hope you enjoyed yourself here.
Welcome. Hope you didn't get mad at us talking about politics, but it's the show's fault.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about politics like 5 seconds. This is the thing that I've found is like people get super triggered, I've discovered, is if you talk about politics for 20 seconds out of a, you know, 10-minute to 1-hour long thing, they will get really, really intense about it. I've discovered this on my podcasts and videos. But you know what? I think your people's reaction should be proportionate to how much time was spent on it. That's kind of my feeling. Anyway. All right. Winners and losers. Every week we choose somebody who won the episode, somebody who lost, from inside and outside the Roy family. Tara, the winning Roy this week for you.
He's been rising throughout the season, and this is his biggest coup yet, getting his father to sign on with Mencken. So, Roman Roy.
Yeah, I would agree. He definitely ended up in a good spot. You know, he gets the whole, like, well done, son, at the end of the episode. So, he definitely wins the episode. Losing Roy.
Well, we're spoiled for choice because kind of all the other kids who are not Roman get the shaft this week. But, or shaft themselves in Kendall's case. But I'm going to go with Shiv, it's starting to dawn on her what a bad decision she made back in episode 2.
Yeah, I agree. She definitely ends up in a bad place. But I would say Kendall is a close second. I mean,
yeah,
losing his legal representation and, yeah, just being in a in a tough spot. He is heading towards a bad place. I like that this show has given us basically kind of three distinct flavors of Kendall being a loser, you know?
Yeah.
Season one and season two, he's also in a bad place, but like, he has a very different attitude in each one. Season one, I would say he's just kind of like more of an injured puppy dog kind of mm-hmm. situation. And he's really like wants to be better, but he's like clearly not able to. Season two, he's kind of just groveling for most of that season. And then season three, he kind of has this sick desperation, closer to season one for sure. But like, he has this desperation that I feel like is much more, feels much more dangerous than in season one. So it continues to be an excellent performance by Jeremy Strong. Anyway, winning non-Roy, in your opinion?
Well, the supposed next president of the United States, Jared Benkin.
Yay.
We'll be seeing him between the TikTok freaks with their jewel pods and guns and whatever else Roman wants to do at ATN.
I would agree that this is a good winning non-Roy. I would also say that Kendall's ex-lawyer, Lisa, won because she doesn't need to deal with Kendall anymore. So that's also a great candidate for winning non-Roy. Losing non-Roy. Tara?
You just mentioned her, but I'm going to say Comfrey, the Barry Schneider's assistant on the comms team, who just... How do you get up in the morning and say, I'm going to go have a great day at Kendall Roy's apartment, watching him do all the stupid shit we specifically tell him not to, and that he pays us to tell him not to, but that he does anyway?
Well, it's a good thing they're not doing it for money, though, Tara, you know?
Well, you're right. there are money jobs and there are heart jobs.
Correct.
We heard this was a heart job.
This was not a money job for them. So.
That's what they said.
Yep.
I mean, it wasn't.
I have a feeling they changed their mind, but yeah. Tough call here. I'm going to go with the Vice President of the United States as a losing non-Roy this episode.
Yeah.
Because he basically loses the favor of the group that he's trying to win the favor of. So a tough call, tough situation for this president of the United States in the show.
Yes.
Quote of the week, Tara.
Well,
there's
a brief moment where Ron is hitting on Willa in the bar. Very blatantly, by the way, in front of Connor, and Connor is letting him do it because he wants his money like all the other candidates do. But Willa is, you know, making conversation and says that her experience with Sands made her realize she didn't want to be a commercial playwright. And mm-hmm. Connor says, the audience decided that for you.
Amazing. Amazing.
Not in a mean way, but it's very funny.
He's very matter of fact about it. I love
it. He is.
I have a favorite Logan Roy quote this week. Quote, we need one voice on this or we could fall apart, and hand it to the fuck donkey gang, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the man has a way with words. Man has a way with words. That's all I got to say about it. All right, Tara. I think that's it. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode. This has been a lot of fun, Tara. Me talking with you about the episode was a lot more enjoyable than watching the episode. So, but I hope you enjoyed either the episode and or this conversation. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week for another recap of The Sweet Smell of Succession.